Hello and welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. And this week, we're bringing you the Huntsville Ham Fest broadcast. We're repeating the live broadcast we did from the Huntsville Ham Fest 2015. So sit back, relax, and listen to QSO.
No, we're okay. So you're a native here.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I know when we've talked before, you've talked a little bit about some of the stuff that you're involved in. Get up a little bit closer to that mic because it's a close talking microphone.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about what you do here. And you're also involved. I know you're involved with Handy Hams.
Oh, yes. Very involved.
So tell us about them. Tell us about you. And you've been up to since the last time we talked to you.
Well, let me tell you. I have been an officially licensed ham now for 20 years. Mm-hmm. I've been licensed now for 20 years as a ham. I got to tell you, hitting that 20-year mark was a big, big milestone, you know, because it's big when you hit the 5-year mark. But when you hit the 20-year mark, it's like, wow, you know you just hit that huge milestone at 10. But when you hit 20, it's like, wow, you know that's the big one. And other things I've been up to, I'm still involved with the Courage Center. I check with them on occasion and find out what they've been up to. Now I'm helping out the Huntsville Library as usual with making sure that, they're informed of amateur radio-related activities. I distribute ARL, When All Else Fails, handouts to the library about emergency preparedness and all kinds of handouts to them regarding handouts to the public and educate the public about emergency preparedness still. It's been a great ride for the years I've been involved in it. One of the biggest things being a special needs coordinator has been the ability to go out and talk to the public about amateur radio and how people with disabilities can be involved in it.
Let me ask you a question. When you're out doing these things, how aware is the general public of, I'm going to say amateur radio and its links to emergency communications and whatnot?
I think the most aware that people are is kind of there's some lack of presumption of it until you remind them of a disaster or something. You kind of remind them of April 27th or you remind them of some major event. And then once you bring up a event of some kind, then they start to think a little bit. Oh, maybe this hobby could be useful in some form or fashion and stuff like that. So it kind of brings that into perspective a little bit, and they start to really start firing the questions off. And I think that's where it brings it all into perspective.
Do you think that emergency communications, the subject of it or the prospect of participating in it, do you think that has a draw to pull people into the hobby, or do you think it's other things that pull folks in and then they get interested in emergency communications?
I think it's both, actually. I think it's the fact that people start out in it, and they start out first with just, the basics of the hobby. I've seen a very big draw of young people getting involved in amateur radio here. Just recently, there's been a big, big, big climb here in the age gap here. We've seen huge age ranges between 5 and 7 and, just even 10. I've seen hams as young as 10 and 5, like I said, 7 getting their licenses. So, I mean, it's really taken a big age gap. So I could definitely say it's growing big time in the hobby aspect.
Well, see, I guess I've never met a 5-year-old ham. I'd like to. That would be really interesting. But I can see how a 5-year-old could pass the technician exam because I've seen some pretty sharp five-year-olds. You know, so that's but now you're tell me a little bit about Handy Hams. I mean, you're involved with them, and I think that really and truly is one of the most I guess I want to say worthwhile groups that folks need to know about their existence and what they do.
Well, they're based out of Golden Valley, Minnesota, and they have been involved in teaching people with disabilities on how to get on the air. And their main goal is to make sure that they educate the people on radio. And the neat thing about Courage Handy Hams is that after they take their test and if they pass, they've started giving the testers, when they pass, they'll give them a radio. They'll give them a starter radio to start out with, a starter handheld radio. And it's just a little Baofeng radio. They start them out with something like that to start out with.
Well, that's interesting. I was going to say there's a lot of groups, I guess I want to say, or a number of groups doing that now. But the thing about Handy Hams is, I mean, we're talking about folks that have handicaps or have severe handicaps. Some folks being wheelchair bound, some folks being blind.
Right.
I don't know if there are deaf hams that are in that get into it somehow that way. I don't understand all that. I just know that they work with folks that are handicapped,
right?
And the results are absolutely amazing.
Yes.
So how does one? I guess I want to say get involved in Handy Hams, or how would somebody go about helping or supporting the group?
Well, the first thing they do is they go to the Handy Ham website, which is www.handyham.org. www.handyham.org. And I also have a link to that website on my page at www.hamradiotv.tk. And I've also been helping a fundraiser for a young woman who is disabled. She's not a ham, but she has been trying to raise money for a wheelchair van. She's about my age. She's a very sweet lady, and she's been trying to get this wheelchair van since this year. And she's at the $420-something mark right now. And her goal is to get a wheelchair-accessible van with air conditioning and a lift that actually works. And I have been informed that the van does not work. The air conditioning just went out in it. Right now they're using a loaner van at this point, but her van has completely gone out. The wheelchair lift does not work. And her name's Kayla Beard, and she has been involved in serving her community as an advocate for the disabled for many years now, and I've been helping her in conjunction with what I do for many, many years now to try and help her get this wheelchair van as a crusade to help her to get this van. So I'm hoping that you'll go to my website, click on the wheelchair van for Kayla link, to help us raise money for this van.
There you go. Why don't you give your website out so folks know where to go?
It is www.hamradiotv.tk. www.hamradiotv.tk. And then just click on the wheelchair van for Kayla link.
Well, that's very, very cool. And I think I'd like to encourage folks to go up to this website, and if you have the ability to help, then by all means, roll up sleeves. It's the wheelchair vans with the lifts on them are very, very they're expensive, you know, and without one, though, a person really can't, you know, get around and be mobile like they would normally, like a normal person would without any handicaps. So we take it for granted when we can just get up and go jump in the car and go down the street, you know, where someone with the limitations of needing the wheelchair, you got to not just transport them, but you got to transport the wheelchair as well. and you've got to do it reliably and safely. So wheelchair vans are a premium. So, but I think that anyone that has, you know, severe handicap and they're wheelchair bound, there needs to be a way, you know, to get those folks.
And I want to tell folks, Kayla is paralyzed from the waist down. She's been born with this condition, but she doesn't complain about it. She's very, you know, content about it. She has been on our local media talking about this thing. She's been very compassionate about it, you know, doing fundraisers, all kinds of things. She does local poker runs here in Alabama. She does a lot of things to try and get the message out about it. And just to see her compassion about this, it really just amazes me how well she does for this. And it just does a lot to say the least. So to me, ham radio to me is not just about, you know, being on the air, being on ham radio itself. It's about giving back to the community and just helping this young lady out in this fundraiser to get this van is my way to say, let's help her out. Let's get this van for her and just make this burden less easy on her.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for stopping by. Once again, give your website address.
Yeah, the website is www.hamradiotv.tk, or better yet, just go to Google and search my call sign, KF4BOG, or just go to QRZ.com and type my call sign that way, and the website is there.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you, sir, for coming by and sharing with us. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I hope that you find some things out there in the flea market area that you just can't live without.
I have contemplated a lot of stuff, but I don't know what I'll walk out with. Thank you so much for having me again.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you.
We want to remind you folks that this HamFest broadcast coming to you from the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, Alabama, is being brought to you by the folks at Ham Test Online. And if you're looking to get the amateur radio ticket, there is nothing better than Ham Test Online. Now, I'm telling you, you can try all kinds of things, but you're simply not going to be able to get the ticket nearly as quick and actually understand things. This is a program course, and the technician test is about $25, I think, somewhere like that. You can't buy the books for that kind of money, and you got a 2-year membership, and actually they give a money back guarantee. So if you don't get the ticket, they're gonna stand by their product. And so it's real easy. We have a product now. It's not actually a product, it's a program, and it's called Ham It Forward. So what is Ham It Forward? Well, this is your opportunity to mentor someone into the ham radio field, even if you feel that you may not be able to be a good mentor. Maybe you feel like, well, I'd like to get somebody into the hobby, but I don't know if I could teach them or not. Well, Ham Test Online is a perfect way to do that, because you can give the gift of ham radio to someone, and that person, once they get their membership and they start studying, it'll be no time before they wind up with a ticket, and they're going to be really happy, and you're going to feel like you accomplished something. Now, this is really good for folks that are in clubs where you may have a whole group of people that you're wanting to get their tickets. Because this course is so programmed in such a way, everybody moves at their own pace, and it has a way of understanding what you understand, or it understands also what you don't understand. So it knows how to send the key questions back to you until you wind up getting it. So what we invite you to do is to go to their website, and that's just simply Ham Test Online. That's Ham Test Online. Also, want to talk to you just a moment about the SkyWave radio, and I've got one right here by me. I don't know. I guess I got to be careful that it doesn't walk off. Where's the SkyWave? It's so small. It fits in the palm of your hand. It's sensitive. I can tell you the SkyWave radio will keep right up with the stuff I grew up with, which is, say, for example, a Hallicrafter's SX100. It's an excellent receiver. Very selective, extremely sensitive. It's got the aircraft band on it. It's got the NOAA weather channels on it. Has a sensitive AM section like you wouldn't believe. Hears through walls, picks up stations that aren't even there. How do you like that? Picks up. Anyways, I want to tell you it's got FM stereo, and 400 memories. It goes from what, 2.6 to 26 megahertz, which is excellent shortwave coverage. I mean, I hate having these band select radios, you know, where you have to select the bands, and then the bands have been predetermined for you, so it doesn't even cover the portion of the band that you're looking for as a radio station is concerned. So anyhow, that's the SkyWave radio. Now, here's what you want to do. You want to go to our website, which is just basically www.us. That's www.us. Or you can go to qsoradioshow.com. And click on that Sea Crane logo. Now, that'll take you into their site. But then we kind of get credit for letting them know where they're hearing about this radio. And, of course, they bring you a lot of the programming that we have on WTWW, including Art Bell. So this is kind of a cool thing. So just go up to our website, and where you see that big Sea Crane logo, click on it and go order you a SkyWave radio. Now, if you mention us, if you say WTWW, what's going to happen is you got a choice. You can get either the portable shortwave radio antenna with the purchase of the radio, or you can get a deluxe battery charger, and it's cool. It does 9-volt. It does AA, AAA, Cs, and D batteries. And when you get a full charge, it shuts down. You can watch the progress of the charging. It's just quite the radio, or the charger, I should say. So if you order the SkyWave and you mention WTWW, you can either get the battery charger or the portable antenna. Either one, and that's free with the purchase of the SkyWave. What a radio! I think you'll find that the thing is absolutely incredible. We want to once again remind you, we're coming to you from Huntsville, Alabama. We are live at the Von Braun Center. There you go. That's a group called Lobo, and me and you and a dog named Boo. And you can hear all the background noise here. We're broadcasting live from the Von Braun Center in Huntsville, Alabama on WTWW. You're tuned to 99.30. And we've got a lady that just sat down here, and I'm going to let her introduce herself because I don't know your name.
Well, hey, Ted. I am Deb Miller. I'm from Hixson, Tennessee. My call sign is KD4DEB, and that comes from I was a member of the Kappa Delta sorority, so it's Kappa Delta for Deb.
There you go. Get up just a little bit closer to that microphone. It's a...
Alrighty.
Heil PR40. It sounds a little better when we talk direct, you know, close to.
Right. Well, close and personal.
Yeah, you go around taking pictures. You took some pictures here, and I said, you know, I'm wondering why someone wants a picture. You know, so I'm like, you know, why does, you know, I would think you'd want to take pictures of things that look nice, you know, that you can remember and keep the pictures. But you said your husband's a ham, and you...
Yes. Okay. He's been a ham for, probably 45 years or so. And we come to Ham Fest, and he goes around and does the wheeling and dealing and looking around. And I usually used to get bored. So I like to take pictures. So I always come around, take pictures of anybody and anything that'll let me take their picture. And then I'll put together a little slideshow and a little PDF file and send it out to everybody.
Well, now let me ask you this question. Have you ever had somebody say, "No, don't take my picture"?
Yes, I have. I've actually had two people before say, "No, you can't take my picture." And I said, "All right, then." And then I had another person also said that he was in the witness protection program. So he didn't want his picture taken, and I said, well, that'll be okay, too. I won't. One time, though, I was taking a picture of one of these potato shooters or something they talk about, and so it was a really neat-looking little thing he had made, and so I was taking a picture of it, and he made me erase the picture off of my camera because he said he didn't want anybody imitating and recreating and duplicating his product. So everybody else is great.
I wonder how he'd advertise his product on the internet.
I don't know.
Try to get customers.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But
no,
anyway.
It doesn't. But you know what? I'll tell you something.
What?
And so this is something I'm finding out. And that is, in business today, a lot of businesses are like this. They do funny things. They have funny ways about doing stuff, you know. And I think, I mean, and you think, well, how could that possibly be? How could that work out? And then you look back, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years goes by, and you find out they're gone.
Right.
So then you're like, well, I guess the funny ways really, really don't work. So
right.
It pays not to be peculiar,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, you know, everybody's different.
Lady walks up with a camera and points it at you. You're supposed to smile.
I say, hey, Ted, smile.
So, your husband got into ham radio, obviously, a number mm-hmm. of years ago.
Yes.
And you're a ham.
Yes.
Okay, but you made a distinction. You said, I'm a ham, but my husband is like... You know, like
he's like the real ham.
The real ham. Okay, okay. So
in more than one way.
Okay, so now what's the difference? I mean, how do you see it? I mean,
okay, he is very active on the radio. Been involved in it for many years. He and I have actually been married 18 years, and he used to say when we were first married, "Well, you need to get your license, and so you could talk on the radio too." And I was like, "Eh, not really." Well, one day I just decided, okay, I want to get a call sign. That's what I wanted was the call sign, not necessarily the ability to talk on the radio. So they were having a ham fest in Calhoun, Georgia. So I went down, took the technician license, passed it. And then about 3 weeks later, went back down to Calhoun, Georgia, and took the general test and passed it. And so now, actually, I've been able to talk on the radio with some of his friends and so forth, and people that I've seen at ham fest over the years.
So now, where do you folks operate? I mean, where does he operate mostly as far as frequencies and all that sort of thing?
I don't even know, but it's frequent. he just says I identify him by kind of who's on there. Like we have, I call them the RV guys, mm-hmm. So they talk a lot about the RV radios. I mean, RVs and their motorhomes and all of that. And then the other one I call the Antenna fellas because they talk a lot about their antennas and all of what they've, you know, what they've put up in their backyard and so forth. Then the other one I call, you know, like, for example, you know, just the jibber-jabbers, you know, the people that talk for 5 hours about a tomato or something. And then there's another one called the Dalton Gang.
Now, folks, did you hear this? She's talking about hams that will talk for 5 hours about a tomato, okay? It happens.
Yes.
It really happens.
And about which is the best tomato, which is the best kind, how do you plant them, how do you water them, you know, do you put them in a basket or do you put them in the ground or do you put them in a bale of hay or whatever. And so it's just a lot of fun listening to people. And I've got to meet a lot of people, and it's fun to come to these ham fests like this because you get to meet and see face-to-face somebody who's been talking on the radio. And, you know, usually a lot of times, you know, the actual person doesn't look like what their voice says you think they're going to look like.
Oh, as a rule, that's the way it is, you know?
Exactly.
That's been one of the most shocking things is to be on the air and talk to somebody for years and years, and then you meet them. And you get this weird feeling because your mind has already created a picture of what you think this person's going to look like.
Exactly.
And they don't look anything like what the mind created.
No, so, not at all.
So it's
so you go, oh, my gosh, you know, I'd have never thought that's who that was.
Well, now, does your husband ever check into, like, say, for example, you're in Hickson,
yes.
Tennessee. No, I'm trying to think, where's Hickson?
Chattanooga.
Chattanooga area.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay. So does he ever check into, like, the Tennessee phone net?
Yes.
On 3980.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in Chattanooga,
yes.
Chances are you guys know K4YMB, Cactus.
Oh, absolutely know Cactus.
And
know him well.
And Miss Joan, yeah.
Yes.
I'll tell you something. That's quite a group. I check mm-hmm. in when I can. But Cactus does all kinds of things. He's everywhere. And he also is one that sends out a lot of pictures.
Yes.
So you get emails. So you guys ought to collaborate.
We do.
Really?
Yes, we actually do. I'll send pictures to him, and he'll send them to me. And so we put them all together. And
now, I'll tell you something strange about this man, okay? And that is, you know, you'll hear him on 3980. And all, he can talk the hind leg right off a mule, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But get him around here in this environment. Say, hey, Cactus, sit down and talk to us on the radio. Busy.
Gotta go.
Yeah. He's very mic shy when it comes. I've tried to get him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that, are you folks, I don't know, but I've been hoping he'd come by here because he's really promoting this new, I don't want to say new, it's old, Cedars.
Cedars of Lebanon.
Right, Hamfest. See, I live in Lebanon. So
oh, okay.
Our radio station is, we say Lebanon, but we're just right over the county line. But anyways, we've been talking about the Cedars of Lebanon Hamfest on the 29th, and I guess they had canceled the thing. And Cactus said, no, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's his favorite Hamfest, because it originally, I think, started off kind of like as a tailgate thing.
Yes.
And I've been to it every year I could go. And then it seems like there were two of them. There was the Cedars of Lebanon Hamfest, and then there was a Gladeville Hamfest, mm-hmm. which that was really confusing to me. But now we're back to the Cedars of Lebanon original tailgate Hamfest at the Cedars of Lebanon State Park. And I understand that's going to be on the 29th.
I think so. I know there was a gentleman that was walking around handing out cards about the Cedars of Lebanon, and he was from Alaska.
You know, it's another thing, too. And it's like, here's Cactus trying to promote this thing. Mm-hmm. He won't even come over and talk to us.
No.
So if you see him, tell him that I've announced on the air that the Hamfest is canceled. Just tell him that.
Oh, okay. But it's not canceled, so y'all out there,
so that'll
still alive and well.
But
that will get him over here.
That's right. That'll get him over here, and he'll what are you doing? You know.
But see, now there's a good example, Cactus. In talking with him, when you saw him, what'd you think?
You know, I think somebody had given me, I had seen a picture of him.
Ah, so you already had a heads up.
Yeah, so that was kind of a cheat thing. But you know, I was thinking, that what we were talking about, that phenomenon we were talking about, it doesn't happen as much anymore because of the internet.
Yes, you can look them up.
Yeah, and a lot of times there's video, you know, of folks up there. And that's changed an awful lot. QRZ, for goodness sakes, has changed.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing. We were doing an interview with Fred Lloyd. He said, I guess he was out somewhere. I don't know where he was. He was on some sort of a de-expedition or something. He's off in, you know, some foreign land, so to speak. And in the process of that, he was listening to two guys talk on the radio that were a great distance away. And he said, one said to the other, oh, well, I'm good on QRZ.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it just hit him. You know, as to the magnitude of what feels like they've turned some lights on somewhere. They've got brighter in here.
I know. That's what I was thinking.
For all you folks that are watching via radio.
there is light in Huntsville.
Well, you know, I think it's really cool. But now, let me ask you this, though.
Sure.
What have you taken pictures of that you thought was, I mean, I guess I want to say the best subjects are the best things that you've caught, you know, taking pictures. You know, and it's amazing what you can do with a cell phone camera.
Tell me. You know, that's what I'm taking pictures with.
It's a little
cell phone camera. And, I mean, they take better pictures than I've got a real expensive camera. This thing's a whole lot better. But, I mean, some of the interesting ones are, you know, just catching people buying or negotiating. Those are always fun pictures to catch.
Oh, yeah.
And I also like to do the ones, you know, where they're actually, you know, changing money back and forth and making the deals. But mainly it's just we enjoy coming to see everybody now because, I mean, we have all the equipment we need, but it's just being nice and being able to talk to people and meet people. So it's really just taking a whole lot of pictures of people. And then, you know, there's a lot of new vendors here at Huntsville.
Well, you know, you were talking about meeting people and talking to people. What's really interesting is you will see people who are familiar because you see them every year at the Hamfest.
Yes, or other ham fest where you go.
And you'll wind up talking to them, folks. Now, you may not see them again mm-hmm. until next year at the ham fest.
Exactly.
But one of the things that I've noticed, and I mean, you go over and grab a hot dog or something, you go sit down to eat it, and I don't know how many times I have sat down and eaten a hot dog or a hamburger with somebody that I ate a hot dog or a hamburger with the year before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit there and talk and exchange stories and whatnot. But I think that that's the other thing that's really kind of funny, and that is apart from the internet and all that, if people have name badges on, I'm going to learn how to talk one of these days. Mm-hmm. Let me get a job in radio if I can. Anyways, we see a name badge, and all of a sudden it hits you. Wait a minute. You know, I talk
to you on the radio.
You know, all the time or mm-hmm. whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a story like that that's interesting, and that is I came to Nashville when I was working in country radio in Michigan, okay?
Good move.
So I came here, and I went to RCA to pick up some record albums because I was working at a country station at the time. And I went inside. There was a fellow standing outside of the RCA building, and he had a cane, and he obviously was vision impaired, and I thought, you know, I said hello, walked inside, and went upstairs and sat down in Chet Atkins' office and talked to him because he always had some good, he liked talking to hams. Mm-hmm. His door was wide open. If you went in there, he'd sit down and talk to you. We had, and my childhood idol was Floyd Kramer. I used to love the Floyd Kramer. Yeah. And believe it or not, I walked in. I was in the restroom in RCA, and I was getting ready to walk out.
Now we're on the radio.
And in walks Floyd Kramer. I thought, now, you know, after having every album the man had, what a place to say hello and meet somebody,
mm-hmm.
you know. But I did say hello. He was very friendly. We talked outside in the hallway. Now I got ready to leave, and this was some time later. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, you know how it is when hams get to talking. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I get ready to leave, and this fella is still standing outside. Said, hey, you want to get in the car for a few minutes and cool off, you know, because it was hot. And so he got in the car and sat down. I said, can I take you some? Oh, no. He said, I'm waiting for my brother-in-law. So I said, well, as soon as he sat down, though, immediately he said, whoa. He said, you've got a Drake TR-4C in here. You know, he was feeling the dial, you know. And I said, yeah. I said, he says to me, he said, well, my call sign's WB4KCG, and I said, well, I'm WB8POM, and it just hit me. This guy, Ron, I'd been talking to on 3895, which was mm-hmm. kind of a renegade frequency back then, and we had been talking every night. Oh, my God, it had to be at least a year and a half, 2 years, and we had gotten to be friends, and we began to recognize each other on the air because he was there, I was there every night mm-hmm. along with a group. Well, that fellow was Ronnie Millsap.
Oh, yes.
And mm-hmm. and so mm-hmm. so and we've been yes. friends ever since. And you know, we talk fairly often. He's heavy into electronics and music and the connection between the two.
And he's a very friendly ham.
He's
I
friendly.
I mean, when he gets on the line, you know, when he gets on, he'll talk to folks just like anybody else.
He's also a genius.
Yeah.
You know, and. But there's an example of a ham radio connection
mm-hmm.
that you're not even aware of. You know, it just, you know, you, all of a sudden you meet somebody and all of a, you've been talking to them, and you're 600 miles away from home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well, that's kind of the way it was at the Waynesville, North Carolina Ham Fest recently. There was a guy that had been talking on the radio and been listening to him for probably 5 years or so. Never had met him, so I finally met him at the Waynesville Ham Fest, and it was kind of interesting, you know, because, again, he was one of those, had no idea that that's who that was going to be.
And I guess then you can pick up on things from facial expressions
yes.
that you can't hear over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes it cool. Now, what's your call sign?
KD4DEB.
That's right. You told me that before, and you gave me the story behind it.
Yes. I was in the Kappa Delta sorority in college. And then my name is Deborah, D-E-B-R-A. So when I got my call sign assigned to me, it came back, and I'm a Tennessee fan. The call sign I got was K-M-4-B-A-M. Think about it. Bam. Why would a Tennessee person want anything having to do with Alabama on their call sign? So I started looking around to get a vanity call, so that's how
now,
I came
up. You may want
to
keep that down a little bit around here. You're surrounded, you know. So
I know. I'm sorry, but you're from Tennessee. So, but anyway, so I came up with the Kappa Delta for Deb. So that's how my call sign came to be.
Well, that's just a cool story.
Thank you. Well, let me tell you a little quick story, too. You're talking about, you know, blind ham operators. Mm-hmm. We were at the Dalton, Georgia Ham Fest, and my husband had quite a few little things on the table to sell. And he decided he wanted to get up and walk around. And so he and I got up and started ready to walk around. And he said, told two guys, said, Richard and Greg, how about you taking, you know, just stay here and look out for my stuff. So when we came back, interesting is Richard and Greg are both blind. So they said, you know, you didn't do a very good job, you know, leaving somebody to look over your wares.
However, don't ever underestimate.
Exactly.
The power of someone who's visually impaired, because their other senses are so acute that...
It is amazing. Because, you know, I've seen them when they were operating, that what they can do is unbelievable. I mean, you're exactly right. It's like when you lose one of your senses, all the rest of them just double up on you. And, I mean, they can feel like what you were talking about. They can feel a radio and know exactly what one it is.
Well, it's. I mean, I took a recorder one time when I was doing an interview with Ronnie. He just touched the front of it and told me what kind it was, the model number and everything, you know. And then I can honestly tell you, he uses this JAWS program, which is an interface. He's faster on a machine, on a computer, than I am. And this thing is rattling off 100 miles an hour, you know. It's like partial sentences and even partial words, because he's moving so fast, you know. Mm-hmm. But just has blown me away, you know, when it comes to that. And then his ear. Oh, I did an interview with him. I'm going to get to you here just in a second, so just be patient here. Did an interview with him, and he starts talking about one of his favorite songs of all time was Ray Charles, What I Say, you mm-hmm. know. So he starts in. You know, he starts going, you know, starting to sing the song, you know. And he kind of goes into it a little bit. Well, later, I went to do the edit. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to play the Ray Charles song right after he starts that, you know. So I got the Ray Charles song all queued up, butted up that piece of audio that he had recorded. And not only was he... perfect pitch, exactly at the pitch the recording was made, the Ray Charles recording.
Mm-hmm.
The timing
was probably exact as
exact.
Well.
Exact. Mm-hmm. I could butt it right up next to the song. It sounded like Ronnie was in the studio with Ray Charles when that song was recorded. Absolutely amazing.
Hmm.
So that's why I say, you know, folks that are visually impaired, they... You know, we have some advantages in one area because we're visual, but they become so acute in so many other areas. And I think they're also more aware of things like character and personality when they deal with people.
Mm-hmm.
I think they in the voice reveals to them things that we just totally miss. Matter of fact, I think with all of our faculties, hearing, smell, vision,
nice.
Touch, and all this kind of stuff. I think what happens is it causes us to kind of skim over everything. We get a general overview. They get an in-depth focus on certain areas, which I think really, you know, gives them an advantage. At least that's
well,
my
it really,
theory.
I mean, it's just amazing. You know, sometimes you say, oh, I feel so sorry for you. But then they say, oh, no, you know, I'm blessed because now things have come into my life, which is, again, at Waynesville, I met a man who was blind, and he said no. He said actually his blindness ended up being a blessing for him because he met a lady. They fell in love, got married. They've gotten very strong religion. And he said actually he's blessed now. And he actually started selling software, said he's making good money, and he said, you know, if he hadn't gone blind, he said he never would have had that.
And to have that attitude is...
unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, that's... Because I that's something a person really has to develop and work on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Listen, thank you very
great
much.
Great talking with you.
Yes, I've got a gentleman sitting here, and I don't know his name, and I don't. I saw you talking over here with David and Holly before you sat down. So tell us a little. Get up on that microphone, though, because that thing is. Let me make sure it's live.
Okay.
All right. It is live.
Yeah, it's live.
All right.
Okay, my name's Bill Davis, KM4HJY. I'm located in Lobelville, Tennessee, and I just got my license. I'm a general license, and I got it back in January of 2015. I took the test for the technician, passed it 100%, then I went ahead and took the general, and now I'm getting ready to go for the extra class. Mm. But, you know, radio has always fascinated me ever since I was about 8 years old. And I started out working for a local radio station in Alabama, and my first job was queuing up reel-to-reel tapes and rewinding carts. We used to use broadcast carts back in the day. back in the day. And to this day, I still have a tape caster cart machine. I still have a little studio. You know, I record music. You know, I take all my old 45s and everybody else's 45s and put them on CD, MP3. And actually, I'm using the same program that you're using. I just want to come by here and say hello, everybody, and welcome to the amateur meeting in Huntsville, Alabama. And it's been a great time. We enjoy talking to everybody, and, you know.
So let me ask you this question. Do you work much HF at all?
Yes. I just put up a dipole antenna. It's actually on 75 meters. And I'm making the 80 meter first, and then I'm putting up a 40. Primarily, I'm working 2 meter and 440. But I do like HF. I like it better. Actually, I like it better than FM.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I can't seem to make myself, and I need to work more VHF. Okay.
Well,
I guess what I miss is years ago there was a citizens band community when I was growing up in the Detroit area, and there were regular people on every day. You knew they were going to be there. You got to be friends with them. You'd go have coffee with them and stuff. And that's the kind of environment I would love to see on the 2 meter band, but it just doesn't seem.
It don't seem to work that way on 2 meter. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you go in and you get on the repeater, you talk to your friends. You know, and in my little town where I'm at, it's the same. You know, same people. It ain't but about 8 of us in this little town of Lobelville. Mm-hmm. It's about 8-9 of us.
Now there was a radio station there.
Yeah, we do have a radio station. We did have. We had an AM station. We have AM, and then in Linden, Tennessee, we have an FM station.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that there wasn't.
It was a big FM station, 94.5.
Ah. Okay. So now that radio station has been moved into Nashville.
It's Hippie FM.
Right.
94.5.
Those are some good friends of mine that run that station.
Well, that's a super station. I listen to it all the way to Dixon. On the other side of Dixon, past the rest area, we lose the signal. But you can listen to them online, but it sounds better over the radio.
And I'll tell you, their transmitter is off of 40, and I'm trying to think of the name of the... The name of the
Bell Mead?
No. It's what's the exit? The name of the road that Hippie's Tower is?
Yeah,
I can't think. It's right on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think.
Starts at the studio.
Is it McCrory? No, is it McCrory Lane?
McCrory Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's right there. There's a cell phone tower. If you'll look up.
Right.
And that's where the antenna and tower is. And it does amazing because I can
see
hear
what they moved that station, but Hippie FM. Now, we have a FM station down in Linden, 101.3. It was Hank FM for a while. Yeah. And then we kept it on the air. I mean, I worked with it. I helped build it and put it on the air, and it was pretty good.
Is that was it? They say Hank FM. They had to be country.
Yeah, it was Hank FM, 101.3. It was classic country. Then I put a bunch of music on it. And then we had an AM station, WMAK, 1570. It's off the air now, you know, and I'm trying to put it back on. I wouldn't mind putting it back on and keeping it going, but they don't want me to do it.
Well, you know, here's what I'm finding. Yeah. It's very interesting. A lot of these corporations have acquired all these radio stations, and some of them are what I would consider to be significant. Like, for example, in the Detroit area, 1310 was the old WKNR, a radio station I grew up with, listening to. And, you know, Clear Channel bought it, and it's just like they destroyed it. And they didn't care anything about it. They gave it away. They tore the towers down. I mean, it's just like...
That's sad.
You know, I don't think, because that station, especially because of its heritage, I don't think the FCC should allow people to do that. I think that radio properties, once they're built and they serve a community...
They stay there.
They should, yeah. But it's all, you know, I'll tell you what it is. It's big dollars, big bucks, and greed.
Yep.
You know, that's what it is.
Radio ain't like it used to be back in the day. You know, it's changed so much.
Radio is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be something that the community falls in love with, becomes mesmerized with, you know. And so far what they have done is the accountants that run these big corporations. I'm lucky I don't have to work for one of them. I work for an independent owner, and he has a completely different philosophy. Although he's very complimentary toward those people. He'll say, well, they have, but really, no, there's no comparison. They came in with the idea that they were going to put a bunch of radio stations, and they were going to have some guy in Chicago voice tracking all of them, you know. Well, that doesn't work, you know. I mean, people are not stupid, you know. I mean, they realize that, you know, they're really getting taken advantage of by this big radio company. And the one in particular, you know, I mean, from what I understand, with everything that's being published with Clear Channel now, that they refer to themselves as, you know, iHeart, like $23 billion in debt, you know. I mean, you think about that. How does somebody get past the first million or half million, you know, let alone $23 billion, you know. Well, I want to say thank you for coming by and talking with us. I really appreciate that. We got a young man that just sat down here now, and I don't know who he is, so I suppose he's going to tell me here.
I'll tell you, we'll just go ahead and give him the microphone, but I just want to jump on here for a minute and talk a few minutes and, you know, let you know that I appreciate everything that's done, you know. And I love radio, and I love ham radio. So I want to say 73 to everyone out there. This is KM4HJY Bill from Lobelville, Tennessee. We're signing off.
All right.
73s.
Okay, 73s to you, too, yeah. And your name is?
Richard.
And your call sign?
Kilo Mike 4 Alpha Oscar Oscar.
Okay, now I don't want to get personal here, but I am going to ask you how old you are.
21.
You're 21, okay. And I'm also going to ask you where you're from.
Murphy, North Carolina.
Okay, so you're a good distance away from home. And so what brings you here?
My dad, before he passed, he used to bring me here, and I just thought I'd come with some friends of ours.
So you like the Ham Fest?
Yeah.
And so do you go through the flea market and find things that you just can't live without?
Yeah.
A lot of people do. Well, what do you like about this hobby? Do you do a lot of operating?
Yeah.
Where do you operate, and who do you talk to?
Usually if I operate, I like to do 10 meters, and I like to listen to 40 meter CW, but I mainly use my Baofeng.
Uh-huh. So
yeah.
You're a VHF guy.
UHF. Most of the time, yeah.
So which is it? 2 meters or 440 or?
2 meters.
2 meters.
Yeah.
So what, now what city are you in?
Murphy.
Murphy. Okay.
Yeah.
And now do they have a lot of activity on 2 meters there?
Not really. It's mainly simplex.
Okay, so, that's still 2 meter activity, and sometimes that can be preferable to repeater activity. So you operate 2 meter simplex. So, just out of curiosity, how many people do you communicate with on a regular basis, or how many would be in a group, let's say?
Most of the time, it's 4 to 8. Not very many.
And, and that keeps you busy?
Most of the time,
really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. So you don't have to get on 10 meters or on other HF frequencies?
Not necessarily.
That's interesting. Because you know, I see you're my complete opposite. I stay on HF most of the time, seldom on UHF, VHF.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. See, you're too young to know, but when I was younger, these guys were converting these Motorola surplus radios to 2 meters. And the audio on these things were absolutely incredible. I thought 2 meters sounded so cool. Now these new rigs, to me, I mean, goodness, they're communications quality. Don't get me wrong. They're totally readable and understandable. And they probably sound a skosh bit better maybe than single sideband, but no, those old 2 meter rigs they converted really sounded sweet. And I hear a lot of guys on AM that really sound sweet on the air. So, of course, a lot of that has to do with microphone and audio change. So how many people are with you here visiting today?
Not including me, 3.
And are they all about your age, or are you...
No, the oldest is 62.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you consider that old?
Nah. No, I don't.
Okay, I was just asking, you know. You know, so, well, I appreciate you coming by here. And is there anything else that you want to talk about before you?
I do have to agree with you on one thing, and that is that the new radios do not sound as good as tube radios. I've noticed that.
That's, well, you know, it's funny. It's a type of sound. You know, it's a type of sound. The tube radio has its own sound because tubes have produce even order harmonics in the audio. Which makes everything sound more mellow or something. You know, I don't know what the actual term is that I want to use, but that's what it is. But I appreciate you coming by here and saying hello and visiting with us.
Thank you, Ted.
And I hope you enjoy the Ham Fest and have a excellent time here.
You too.
Okay. I'm just wanting to tell you this is radio station WTWW. And we are broadcasting at 9930 on your shortwave radio dial with 100,000 watts of power coming out of just outside of Nashville, Tennessee, right over the I guess I'm going to say the Wilson County line. I'm kind of killing time here for a second. I was going to do a couple of commercials, but I saw Don Wilbanks.
Speaking of time killers, a
bright green shirt here.
Well, you know, I like to stand out. As soon as I figure out how to work this chair, drop the radio.
Hello, Don.
Well, don't.
I hear you a lot on the radio.
Hey, how are you doing?
AF4JR. Hey, I'm from the Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh,
area.
Cool.
I love your program on. I'm sorry. You go
no,
first.
We're all one big happy family here.
No, you go first, Don.
You scoot up. Close to that PR40, you know what
yeah,
to
I
do.
I know how to work that thing.
It sounds like you're too far away. So
I may just hold it.
But you may have.
I may just hold it. There we go.
You go first, man.
There you go. That's
how you work a PR40. What's going on, man?
We're 100,000 watts on 9930. People probably hearing you in China right now.
Well, good.
I don't know if you can speak Chinese.
I just dropped the radio again. Well, that's exactly what they need in China is more me.
what? Don's having a rough time over you. Now, let me ask you a question.
That was an ID-51.
Okay, you didn't...
Oh, nice.
You didn't start early this morning, did you? At the lounge or something?
No, not yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice one.
Well, Don is... the thing I want to talk to you about right now is Amateur Radio Newsline.
Yeah.
And kind of bring us up to date on that. Now, I know we carry it. It runs 3 or 4 times on WTWW.
Yeah. How do you spell that?
Anyways, you want to tell us, give us an update on it. Tell me how we doing with Amateur Radio Newsline.
Amateur Radio Newsline, in a word, is back. We are carrying on as Bill would want it, and... We are in our, let's see, what is it, 4th consecutive week, 68, 69, 70, no, 5. We're episode 1968, 1969, 1970, 71. We just, I think, are working on 72 or whatever the current one is. I'm not sure.
I could look it up.
that.
But we're working on it. We're good. We're going. Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT, is the new writer and editor, and she has stepped in to take over from what Bill was doing. I'm trying to get a little higher here. What Bill was doing with that, because you know that you're a radio guy. You know the easiest thing in the world to do is what we're doing right here. That's yakking to your yakker. It's having stuff to yak about. That's the hard part. And so she is a writer for New York Newsday, and is published. And she emailed us saying, "I'd like to help any way I can." And so Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, and I, who are kind of, I guess, the most visible faces or voices or whatever of recent Newsline episodes, we were on a conference call with Bill the Sunday before he passed, and we basically, Skeeter read her qualifications, and Bill's response was, "Hire her, hire her, hire her." And then, you know, 2-3 days later, he was gone. And so we have. And she has jumped into that with both feet. She is extremely qualified, extremely talented. She is a ham. She's a fairly new ham. She's only been on ham radio for a year or two, maybe, I guess. She's a general. She's on HF. She's got a little vertical antenna at home in New York. But she's loving this. She has jumped in, and she is the most enthusiastic person I have ever met in my life. I am in contact with her every day, multiple times a day via email or Facebook private message or phone call. And she's like, okay, I want to start working on this story here. How do I go about this? And you know, and point me in the right direction. And are we doing this right? And is this, this, and this? Yes, it's all good, Karen. You're perfect. And so we're back. We're back in publication, and hopefully we'll not miss any more weeks. We're certainly going to do our best.
Well, we just kind of went into a holding pattern. I at some point in time, I'll contact you and give you the times that it runs on WTWW. But it's multiple times per week on different frequencies. Yeah. So we obviously get different coverage areas when we do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And I always, I guess I want to say, of all the produced programs that we've had at our fingertips, from a broadcast perspective, somebody that's been in the business as long as someone like you and I, it is the most professional delivered and produced program on radio as far as ham is concerned. I mean, I'm going to tell you, and this is the way, and, you know, I see Bob Heil over here.
Mm-hmm.
Amateur Radio Newsline blows QSO away. It blows Ham Nation away.
Wow.
And it blows everything away because it is... It's news, it's content, it's hardcore, but the thing of it is the most difficult job has been what Bill did. Bill did so much writing and whatnot, and then you hear people like Jim Davis sit down and deliver the thing, and it sounds like he's just...
You know, who worked in Chicago and was a boss jock in Los Angeles and this, that, and the other thing, and, is a legend and, a big-time jock and...
But the thing of it is he was dependent on the script.
That's what it goes back to the whole thing. It's easy to yak into your yakker like we're doing right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's having stuff to yak about. That's the hardest thing. And you can boil down any success or any kudos that Amateur Radio Newsline has ever had or ever will get to Bill Pasternak.
Yeah.
Bill was Newsline. Newsline was Bill. And I've said many times, we are not stepping into his shoes because his shoes are way too damn big for my feet, way too big for everybody's feet. What we are doing is we are standing in his footprints, and we are continuing to walk forward in his spirit, and that's what we're trying to do with Newsline.
I want to say one thing, though. I don't know if you ever were able to. We were going to hook up at one point when I did the two-hour special that I had of him.
Yeah.
And, wow, what an interview that was. He was just incredible.
Yeah.
But what about Bill I found, and if you ever watch the ARRL PR Reflector and all that kind of thing, something would happen, okay? And I don't know, it could be anything.
Yeah.
Bill would jump in. He was never the slightest bit afraid of controversy.
Right.
Or stating common sense.
Right.
When everyone else was climbing up a tree somewhere.
Right. And we're going to continue that. I mean, I'm not a shrinking violet either. Uh-huh. I'm one of these people personally that if I'm not ripping you on something, you need to find out because I'm mad at you and there's something wrong with our relationship. Mm-hmm. If I'm leaving you alone, you need to worry. And I've never been one to shrink back and go with the flow. If there's something wrong that I need to disagree with or that Newsline needs to disagree with, I'm using the royal I as in amateur radio Newsline, we'll do it. We're not going to, you know, I mean, we have to maintain the credibility that Bill Pasternak started, and there's a very close to four-decade track record of credibility and things that we have to live up to. And it's not an easy job, and it will not be an easy job, and it will never be an easy job, and it should not be an easy job, but it's a job that has to be done.
Well, something happened. I can't remember what it was, and it wasn't anything really horribly significant. But,
right.
But I spoke up and said something. I just made a comment, you know, and just out of the blue, here comes Bill.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not only does he have my back, but he's just being way more aggressive than I felt comfortable doing. You know.
Well, he's a Brooklyn boy. They don't shy back from much. Those Brooklyn boys.
No, they don't.
And.
No.
You know, there was a couple of times some things had happened. I talked to him on the telephone, and boy, he says, no, that's just not the way it is.
Right.
You know, and he set you straight real quick.
That's him.
You know,
love that man.
Yeah, he was he was just absolutely incredible. Yeah. And I had the pleasure in that interview we did. He starts talking about when his mother was sick, and how all of the friends on 6 meters at that time. How they rallied around him and kept his spirits up and going.
Yeah.
And he told me on the interview, he said, and that's the reason or that's the thing that drives me to produce amateur radio Newsline every week. Now, the one thing I want to point out to people who are listening, and I know that the listeners to this station are familiar with Newsline. They hear it because it's on.
Yeah.
But you don't know how much work goes into something like that.
I had no clue, and I've been involved with Newsline for 20 years, and you know, there were a couple of times that I had to just put the newscast together, not write it, just assemble it and produce it and get it posted. And it's something also that I've discovered, and I always knew this because, you know, of the broadcast background. For every hour you're on the air, there's at least an hour of prep that people don't see, and video production. Doing the Ham Nation amateur radio Newsline video segment, even though it's very, very elementary, the kind of video that I produce. But, you know, a minute of produced video is about an hour of work. And so, yeah, it's very time-consuming to the detriment of you know, free time with my family sometimes. So it's a balance. It's a labor of love for sure, and it is a labor.
On Ham Nation, it's there somewhere.
There you go.
I was going to say, why don't you describe the segment you do? Because it is a Newsline segment.
It is, yeah. It's
and how it, I mean, what's you know, how is it Newsline? What makes it Newsline, and what can folks expect if they, you know, we've got a bunch of guys out here that just don't they don't cotton to watching video,
right.
But they need to,
sure.
Because this is where it's at.
Right.
You've got to be able to watch video. They watch YouTube, you know, but what can they expect, or what portion of Newsline, or what can they learn or experience watching Ham Nation when you come on?
Well, it's essentially a headline digest. Newsline prior to Bill's death was about a 30-minute, a little bit less, news program. Now, we have shortened that down to two segments instead of three, so it's about a 20-minute, 17-minute or so newscast. We're in the process of doing some streamlining and modernizing. So what we do is we'll take the top four or five important stories or most interesting stories, and it's my call because I'm the one who produces the video, from Amateur Radio Newsline, and we will basically do a quick video headline news update. It's like a 5-minute news break, essentially, is what it is. And we'll take a story, and I'll spend about any, 45 seconds or a minute of audio, perhaps from amateur radio newsline. Typically, I'll just take it straight from there, and I'll find some visuals to go along with it, whether it's stills or video or whatever. And we'll do 3, 4, 5 stories, whatever it takes, and we'll condense that down into basically like what you would see a news break. It's my talking head a little bit, but it's not all my talking head. We have visuals to go along with it. And it's just it's a visual adjunct, I guess, a distillation of the weekly amateur radio newsline audio report, and it's the Cliff Notes version, I guess you could say.
But still, in all, that segment is how long?
About 5 minutes. Oh. Actually, well, now we have Dr. Tamitha Scove with the solar update, and that's another 3 or so minutes after that. So the total segment is about 8 minutes, but I try to make it no longer than 5, usually between 4 and 5 minutes for the news segment.
But that 5 minutes of news segment, which is just like you said,
distillation.
I don't know what causes that.
I don't know.
A malfunction somewhere.
Exactly.
But 5 minutes, generally, though, production-wise, how much time does that take?
When I first started doing it, it was about an hour per produced minute. I've gotten to the point now to where it's a lot. I've streamlined a lot of things, and it takes me to do that 4 or 5 minutes. Still takes me about 3 hours.
Well, I guess what I'm pointing out that when you're watching Ham Nation, okay, yeah, and you see Don or you see any of the segments that's on there, folks have put a lot of elbow grease into putting this all together for you,
yeah,
and capsulizing it and make it go by
right
quickly.
Yeah.
And the other thing is. You know, these folks are doing this because they love the hobby. This is not like...
I'm not getting paid.
That's not a paycheck.
No, I'm not getting paid.
They love the hobby, and they're really trying to share the hobby with other folks. So
yeah,
that's why I'm saying I don't care what age you are.
Yeah.
You really ought to be doing things like watching Ham Nation and participating in some of the media productions that are on the Internet and on radio and whatnot. So.
And I'm just... it's a huge honor... And for me to be part of either of those two entities, Ham Nation and Amateur Radio Newsline, and coming to a Ham Fest like this, and I see Tom Medlin, W5KUB's lovely wife Kathy over here over our shoulder taking our picture. We'll pose for the candids later, Kathy. Okay, you know what I mean. I kid. I love Kathy. Kathy and Tom. Just the amount of money that is spent on bringing these things to the amateur radio public is just amazing. But getting back to walking around through here, I mean, I see it. I can't walk through here without being stopped. And, hey, I watch you on Ham Nation, or I love what you're doing with Amateur Radio Newsline, or we're glad you're back, or whatever it is. And I can make you and everybody listening a promise. I will never, ever tire of that. I will never stop being humbled by that, because what I get to do is a privilege. I don't have to do this. I'm not making a penny from doing this. It is a huge cost in time away from my family to do this. But you know what? It's worth it. Because A, it's fun. B, it's a service that somebody needs to tell it. Somebody needs to do this. But just the appreciation that the viewers and listeners show and the love that you get back from them makes all the hard work worth it.
I just want to say, Tom's got a camera set up here right now. If you go to
W5KUB.com. Yeah, we're on there right now in my green shirt.
W5KUB.com on the Internet. And it's surprising the folks that listen to shortwave that will have a computer going at the same time and listening to the shortwave radio,
mm-hmm,
and I mean little shortwave radios. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's interesting.
Yeah.
The thing that gives me the most, I guess I want to say, the biggest thrill is, and we have a lot of this at Dayton. We have it here, but we run into more of it at Dayton. Folks come up to the booth and say, hey, you guys are the reason I got my ticket.
Yeah.
I watched it, and I've listened to you guys for however long it is, And of course, to me, it just seems like if that's the purpose in it, and that's the purpose why we're here. You know, we're here to promote the hobby.
Sure.
I happen to think that the most ready prospective amateur radio operator is the shortwave listener.
I think you're right. Absolutely. You know?
And we got gobs of them. And last night we did an oldies show from Huntsville.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last check was, and I don't know because I didn't have the mailbox, we were hitting hard with the email address, but I think we got somewhere in the tune of around 1,000 emails.
That's amazing.
That came out of the...
That's great.
Or thereabouts. And then tonight, we're going to do an oldie show from the lobby of the Embassy Suites. We're just going to just sit down
cool.
at the table, we'll start playing
Sounds
oldies.
Fun.
And
what time is that going to be?
I'm telling everyone it's somewhere between 7 and 8 o'clock. Just depends on... But, you know, with shortwave, you know, we...
Exactly.
We can
do
come
whatever
on
you want.
But the... But I think that'll be fun because we're just going to get a bunch of guys around talking and shooting the breeze and playing some old music.
Just like
and
we're doing.
Nothing formal, you know.
Okay.
This is not my first foray into shortwave radio. I mean, I was a listener forever, but back in 1984, after I moved to New Orleans, I went to work for a local radio station in New Orleans on FM. And if you're an avid shortwave listener, you will recognize this call sign, WRNO. WRNO Worldwide, Joe Costello, who was a ham, he decided he wanted to get back into, wanted to get into commercial shortwave.
He was the first.
Yes, he was.
Commercial shortwave station.
Yes.
In the United States.
And what was cool about that was he, in a time in the 80s, you know, when, you know, it was Cold War time, the Russians were, you know, an evil threat, he was broadcasting rock and roll and Levi's commercials and everything else that was that the American youth took for granted, broadcasting it over shortwave. And of course, RF energy knows no boundaries. Anybody can pick that up. And so it was amazing when and I was on the FM, and when we would flip the switch and simulcast WRNO 99.5 FM, FM 100, the Rock of New Orleans, over WRNO Worldwide, we had an 800 number in the studio, and it would light up, and you never knew who or where was going to be on the other end of that request line. And in fact, there was a guy, Josh Gaffin is his name. He was a listener in New York, in Brooklyn, and he would call up and talk to me when we were simulcasting on Worldwide. This is 1984. And he and I have remained friends. He is a ham. He is in broadcasting now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina next week, the 29th. We were talking about this earlier. I came to, 10 years ago, I came to the Huntsville Ham Fest the third weekend in August. The fourth weekend in August that year, we were evacuating for Katrina. Josh had a $50 gas card that he said, you know, somebody gave me this, and I don't, you need it way more than I do. I'm going to mail this to you. And it just, I would not have made that friendship had it not been for WRNO Worldwide and the shortwave. I would not, Josh and I would not know who each other are. And he just got married, so congratulations, Josh. He's probably listening. He's still in the shortwave. But just, you know, it's the power of radio in all of its various forms is just a force of nature.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. I think shortwave radio is the essence of radio.
Yes, absolutely.
And here's an interesting thing. Back years ago, there was a gentleman on The Voice of America whose name was Willis Conover.
Yeah.
Did a jazz show.
Yeah.
The BBC estimated his audience, and I don't know how they do that, but they do it.
Yeah. You
know, at about 30 million.
It's amazing.
Okay. So,
that's scary.
Now, the thing that I want to say is that back in his day, all shortwave radios had tubes.
Yeah.
I don't think there were any. There may have been some portable stuff.
Right.
If there were portables, they were tube, Zenith, Transoceanic,
Exactly,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so they were tubes. They sat on tabletops.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Today, and I keep telling folks, this is the heyday of shortwave.
Yeah.
This right here, folks.
Right, yeah, the Sea Crane.
Yeah, I'm holding up a Sea Crane Skywave.
That is slightly larger than a deck of cards and about as thick.
Yeah, and it's in the palm of my hand.
Yeah.
This thing will blow away my Halicrafters SX-100.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people would say, oh, come on.
No.
No, really.
Absolutely.
I was in the hotel last night, amongst all the steel girders and walls and everything. I turned this thing on, and 5085 was coming in like a local AM station.
Crazy, isn't it?
You know, but these, I mean, what I'm saying is now we have this.
Yeah.
We have people like Grundig.
Yeah.
The Texan radio company in China that pumps out, they claim 30 million or 30,000 a day.
Wow.
In this huge plant. So I guess the thing that I'm saying now, we have this. This explains to me why I can get 600 emails on a music show.
Yeah.
Because Radio Shack has sold these. Are all over eBay.
Yeah.
Gigaparts sells shortwave radios. Everybody does, you know. So, but anyways, it is pure magic when your phone rings.
I just want another prize.
Go get it. But it go, Don.
They'll wait for me.
When the phone rings and there's a guy on the phone in Cape Town, South Africa.
No.
And he holds the telephone up to his radio and you hear the music that you're playing, obviously with some some delay.
Right.
It's amazing. It's like, and you're thinking there's no internet.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing involved here, just pure radio, you know.
The first taste of that I got was the second radio station that I worked at. I'll be 55 next month in September. And when I was 10 years old in 1970, I told my mother, I want to be and I will be the voice coming out of your radio. And so I've been lucky enough to have done that since high school. I got into radio in 78, 79. And in 1981, the second radio station I worked at was KOMA in Oklahoma City, a 50,000-watt AM radio station. Now, on 1520, the only other signal on 1520 at night was a Buffalo, New York station, WKBW. So we had a three-tower array back in the backyard. In fact, in the most recent tornadoes that went through Moore, Oklahoma a few months ago, one of their towers actually fell. It was one of their old Blaw Knox towers. Two of their towers actually fell, and one of them was folded in thirds. So they've got new towers going in. That was KOKC. That's the former KOMA. But anyway, at night, KOMA and WKBW were the only things on 1520 at night. And we went, with our three-tower array, we went 99.9% west. There was a book on radio programming. This is inside baseball kind of, but there was a book on radio programming called by a guy written Claude Hall. And there's a disc jockey in Los Angeles. His name is Charlie Tuna. He worked at KOMA back in the 60s, and he left and went to Los Angeles. Well, Claude Hall had a write-up on Tuna in his book, and Tuna talked about being on the air at KOMA and picking up the request line and it being Brian Wilson or somebody from the Beach Boys saying, hey, we're hanging out on the beach in Waikiki listening to you right now on our transistor radio. 50,000-watt radio station from Oklahoma City being heard there. Now, the first taste I got of that, I worked all nights. I would get calls from all over the country at night. We had a world map with pushpins in it from all over. And I got cassette tapes of my voice from, you know, Europe and the Sea of Japan and stuff. But the coolest thing was getting a call from a lady up in Maine. Now, again, WKBW Buffalo, New York is very, very close to that on the same frequency. She was hearing me because the signal went all the way around to get to her.
Long path.
Long, very long. And there was a delay. And it was just, I mean, I was already totally and completely enamored with radio, but that was like a hook in a fish's mouth to me. It's like, this is why I want to do this.
You know, there's a lot of folks now that don't have internet access all the time.
Right.
They have it part of the time.
Right.
Some way or way. But we get emails from folks that have MP3 files attached.
Right.
And or videos, video clips of their radio.
Yeah.
You know, and
an iPhone movie of their video of yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's just, you know.
Isn't that amazing?
Just phenomenal. Totally phenomenal.
I know.
You know. But, you know, the thing is that I think what happens with folks that they don't realize is that this is, you know, it's not, I guess I want to say, new technology, but yet it to them it appears new. It's like they discover it, and all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I didn't know this existed.
You new
know?
To them.
So that's what... I guess I want to say that's the thing that really that turns my crank when I have, you know, and I read an article and it just hit me. This doctor, somebody I don't know, worked for, who did he work for? Maybe BBC.
Yeah.
He said that a lot of the bulk of shortwave listeners, and I thought about this, and I just don't know they're listening to shortwave.
They just know they're listening to a radio.
They're looking for a program, and they know where it comes in on the dial and where they got to put the switch.
Sure.
You know, and they don't even know it's shortwave.
Right.
You know, but then it hit me, a lot of the emails that we get are that way.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not we did a test. We put a new transmitter on, and we did this program called This Is Only a Test. Okay. And the emails came in, and the phone calls came in, and I'm telling you, I was expecting a bunch of hams. I would say 85% of the audience were not ham operators. Didn't, you know, and what was really strange is their awareness of ham radio, because they would always say, they would say things like, I haven't got my ticket yet.
Right.
You know, one of these days I'm planning on getting it. It was almost like they felt moved to make an excuse as to why they didn't have a ham ticket.
Right.
And then it hit me. I thought, okay, now these are the guys we got to go after.
That's exactly right.
Because that's how we bring most. You know, I don't want to I don't want to tie you up. I know we could talk all day long.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about what you do today. If folks don't know exactly, I know you're into your radio production.
Yes.
And tell a little bit about what you do on a daily basis and how you got into this.
I'm a reformed disc jockey. I got off the air and moved into the production end of things. And basically, that's a fancy word for I write and produce radio commercials. And I am the creative / production director for iHeartMedia New Orleans. iHeartMedia is a company formerly known as Clear Channel. The biggest terrestrial, anyway, radio company in the country for sure, and probably one of the biggest in the world. But so what I do, we have 8 radio stations in New Orleans, and I am the creative production director. So I write and produce radio commercials for all 8 radio stations. I assign scripts to other talent to record and produce radio commercials for whatever. I'm quality control to make sure that everything sounds right. I want to make sure that a salesperson doesn't turn in a 66 or 67 second script for a 60, because, you know, by the time we play that 10 times, that's 60 seconds that we can't sell. So that's what I do. I write and produce radio commercials. It's funny. I have a whole spiel. Anytime we have someone come into the radio station, we have a staff meeting, and all the program directors get up and they, you know, hello, I'm Uptown Angela and I'm the urban program director. Hello, I'm Jim Fisher. I'm the production the program director for News Talk. And hello, I'm this and hello, I'm that. I say, hi, my name is Don Banks, because that's the name that I use on the air, have forever. I am the production director, which basically means I write and produce radio commercials, and I am a mover of mountains, I am a doer of the impossible, and I am a herder of cats.
Now, the next question is,
that's what I do.
In radio production is a lot more involved than what most folks think.
Yeah.
My question is, do you ever do character voices and things? Have you ever adapted to that?
Yeah. One of the things that I had to do most recently for the Blood Center of Southeast Louisiana, they decided they wanted commercials with singing in them. The first one was Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and it was horrible. I put as much echo on my voice as I possibly could, and I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. But they got the most response from their blood drive that they've ever had ever from that commercial that I did. The second one I did, Garth Brooks came in concert. So they wrote lyrics for Friends in Low Places that was blood donation-centric. And so I got to sing. I got to be Garth Brooks for 15 seconds. Hey, we need donors from all age, you know, that whole thing. And again, oh my God, it's so embarrassing. I hate doing it. But you know what? It's effective advertising and it works. So yeah, I do that. I get to do voices and character voices, and it's acting. It's voice acting. So that's what I get to do. But I touch every part of it. I touch everything that comes into that radio station in one way or the other as far as commercials. From a salesperson coming in going, I have a new client. How can we, you know, okay, well, tell me who, what, where, when, and why, and give me a website and show me this, and I'll help you write it. And so from the very, very glimmer of planting the little seed in the ground, of an idea to the finished production and hopefully an effective radio commercial for the client. That's what I do.
Just want to say, by the way, you can look at W5KUB.com. Tom Medlin is here, and he's got the camera trained on us, I guess. I can't see what the camera's looking at, but W5KUB, you got internet access, W5KUB.com.
And as a matter of fact, I want to say right now that people don't know this, but Tom Randall and I, we're going into business right now. We're going into the pest control business. So right now, if you do a screenshot, wave at the camera. Wave the camera, Ted. Wave, okay. Ted. Wave. Okay, now take your screenshot right now. If you take and you print that picture and you tape it up on your refrigerator in your kitchen, you will never see another roach in your kitchen. It's the Randall and Wilbanks Pest Control Service, and we do it as a public service. We don't make any money. It's just, you know, from the goodness of our hearts, and that's what we do because we're givers. Right, Ted?
That's absolutely correct. Now, now, the reason I was asking about character voices is because I had... folks think, you know, when they hear a commercial on the radio, they think that, well, that was some professional actors in New York doing this, and the, you know, and they hear it on their local station, but they don't realize how much local production goes into these things.
75% to 80% of the stuff that we do is local generated. Yeah,
And it gets to the point where they don't. Not only do they not realize that, but they hear it and they don't even know who they're listening to when they hear these voices. Yeah. You know, they don't know.
The highest compliment anybody in our radio station, a salesperson or whatever, can give me is to walk up to me and go, "My God, that sounded like an agency spot." It's like, well, I've earned my money.
Yeah, well, do you think the agencies are all that much tighter than the local people? I mean,
No.
The other thing, too, I mean, about radio commercials, and that's this. When you think that you're doing a voice or you're singing something...
badly.
While you're having to pinch yourself all the while you're doing it.
Yeah, use that term loosely, singing.
You know, you
sounds like a dying calf in a hailstorm.
You, but you stop and think about how many commercials have you heard. All of a sudden, this voice comes on and says, hello, this is Joe, whatever my last name is, over here at such and such furniture.
Uh-huh.
Hey, well, I want y'all to come over here because we got some stuff going on that you ain't going to believe. Okay. Now, you and I, as radio guys, we sit here and go, oh, my God, what on earth is this guy thinking? But yet, when he gets done, he's got customers coming through the door, and it makes our head spin. It's like, oh, how can this be?
You know? Well, I'll give you a little behind the scenes. There's a client that we do every year. It's an alligator festival. You know, I live in South Louisiana, so we have the alligator festival. And one of the commercials that we've been reproducing this commercial every year for the last 5 or 6 years, probably. The only thing we really have to change are the musical acts and the dates. But it's basically is the premise is it's the middle of the night. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, and a cop comes up and he sees this guy sitting, you know, under a tree. And it's the cop is what are you doing, sir? Me? Oh, I'm waiting for the Alligator Fest. Oh yeah, I love the Alligator Fest. Da-da-da-da-da. And he goes on and on about that, and you know, all the bands are good, and the cop goes, you know, because, ooh, they are good. Oh, yeah, I could sing a few bars, but then I'd scare away the pigeons. Move along, sir. And then the announcer comes on and says, the Alligator Festival, da-da-da-da-da-da. And so all three voices are me, and they all sound different, hopefully. But that's one of the things that, you know, you got to get into the head of, you know, I'm the cop. I'm the no-nonsense cop. You got to move along, sir. And then, okay, I'll move along. But, yeah, it's all acting, and you got to get into the head of the character. So it's fun.
I think one of the best radio guys that I've grown to appreciate, I guess I want to say, in my eyes, he and Art Bell, I guess I want to say, would hold the award at that level, and that is Phil Hendry.
He got his start in New Orleans. He worked in New Orleans before he went syndicated. Oh yeah, well, you talk about voices and all his different characters. That's all Phil.
I know
every bit of it.
What's really funny though is to hear people call up. Here's Phil. He's talking to a fake voice.
Yeah,
the fake voice is him. The fake voice is saying something that is just off the wall, off the scale.
Yeah,
And the people that are calling in are getting mad at the fake voice.
You know? Oh, yeah, because they have no idea.
I know. And
I got roped into that when our radio station had Phil on for a while, and I would listen. I'm going, who are these? This is, and then I got to listening more and more and more and doing a little research, and I'm like, that's all Phil.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At that point, it's like mind blown.
Yeah,
such a talent.
He uses an off-hook telephone and a couple of other telephone mouthpieces that sound a little different.
Probably a megaphone. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if you listen closely, though, he doesn't really change his voice that much.
Not really. It's just characters. It's theater of the mind.
Exactly. And I was going to say, and that's where the mind fills in.
Oh, he's brilliant.
It's almost like ventriloquism.
Right. Exactly.
I did an interview once with...
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Yeah, that's what it is.
With Paul Winchell.
Yeah.
And his hero was Edgar Bergen.
Right.
And it was really interesting because I always noticed that when television did Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, the camera was always on the dummy. Now,
right.
You know, Edgar Bergen started off in radio doing Charlie McCarthy.
Right.
But the difference was Edgar Bergen did the type of ventriloquism where he didn't make any attempt at all, hardly.
To hide
the mouth moving.
Right, okay? Exactly, yeah.
So, to me, that was a big letdown because, like, Paul Winchell was a complete, he was totally proficient at that.
Yeah.
You know, and he talked about substituting letters like P, B, and how to actually do those.
Exactly.
You know? And
and that's an art. No, I've tried that. That's an art.
So, I guess with Phil Hendry, I think what he learned is the science of where the ventriloquist is a he uses distraction.
Exactly.
You know, if you got something difficult to say.
He's an audio magician.
He'll move the dummy's head or do something
right.
to distract the people watching. You know?
Right.
And I think that's what Hendry does. Hendry's able to do that. You are so concentrated on the content and the screwiness
exactly.
of it that you don't notice that the voice is actually Phil's. It's not very far away from...
Total theater of the mind.
Yeah. That's just the way it is.
It is.
But now, you were talking about an alligator.
The Alligator Fest, yeah.
Of course, now that's a whole lot different
than
festivals you find in the northern part
of
the United States.
That's part of the joy of living down in the south in Bayou country. You know, there, and especially this time of the year where the alligators will actually, they'll crawl out of the swamp at night because it's getting a little cool. Of course, they're cold-blooded animals. They want to get on something warm. Wow, what's warmer than this nice long stretch of I-10? And it's the first few times, if you're not used to it, seeing a 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 foot long alligator wadded up on the side of the road from getting run over by an 18-wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God! In fact, there was a few months ago in New Orleans. It happened like 3 o'clock in the morning. A guy's driving a minivan down I-10 going east in that part of town. It's kind of out in the swamps in the Bonnie Carey, not Bonnie Carey, but in the there's a wildlife preserve out there. It's three lanes. He's rolling along in the middle lane. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Bam! He hits a 3-foot alligator, stops him dead in the middle lane. The alligator's wadded up under the car. It's dead. 18-wheeler's coming along to the side. Another car, I guess, gets sick of being behind the 18-wheeler, whips around, and rear-ends the minivan that just ran into the alligator. And I think somebody died in that accident, so it was tragic. But that's, there. No matter where you live, there's always something. You know, I grew up in Oklahoma. We get tornadoes. You live up in the north. Weather-wise, you know, you get snow. You live on the east coast, you have, you know, this. You live on the west coast, you have wildfires and earthquakes and whatever. You live down in the south, you have hurricanes and alligators, roadkill. That's and feral hogs. You don't want to hit a 300-400-pound hog with your car.
Well, you know, I was going to say the other thing too that you see in your part of the country is armadillos.
Yeah. I ran over one night. In a Honda minivan, made the most racket you've ever heard in your life.
And of course, now in Tennessee, you run into possums.
Yeah, we have those too.
And the possums get out in the middle of the road, but they have the innate ability to wind up in the road for some reason.
Oh, they like the road.
Unfortunately, you know, there's no way to deal with them. You come up on something doing 65 miles an hour, you know, you're gonna hit it. There's
you
no
would
way
think to... that you would think that all these different animals who are prone to being killed in the middle of the road would kind of get together and form a committee and say, you know, we need to stop this activity. But, you know, of course, it's not going to happen. Uh-huh. But that, yeah, that's the most bizarre thing is the reptilian contingent, you know, the alligators in the middle of the road at night rolling down I-10 and just seeing a wadded up alligator. And, you know, roadkill, it sits on the side of the road until, you know, the buzzards or whatever come and get it. And we have big turkey buzzards down there, too. So they clean it up pretty quick. But there is... Not, how can I put this delicately?
Those things are scary looking.
Yes, anyway, they are. You know. Yeah. And you don't want to roll up on one of those either, especially in a motorcycle, because they have the nasty habit of if you scare them real bad, they'll fly over you and throw up. And you don't that's not something you want. But there is nothing. I'm not sure how I can put this. Well, I guess since I've just mentioned buzzard vomit, I can put this fairly indelicately. Nothing spoils faster than a reptile. Mm-hmm. Oh my God! It doesn't take long. Roll by one of those on a motorcycle. And it's like, oh, I got to get on the other lane.
Well, wouldn't it be kind of a mysterious thing, though, to be in a position where one of those turkey buzzards, you know, threw up on your car or something? I mean, is that? I guess what I'm saying is it, you know, it's surprising.
I've heard the story back when I used to be a motorcycle rider. I sold it several years ago, but a guy I knew rolled up on one, and the buzzard, you know, flew up. It was eating. And it didn't get out of the way fast enough, and the guy he had a Harley, I believe it was, or Goldwing, whatever it was. Anyway, a big dresser bike, and he clipped the bird with the windshield. It broke the windshield. The bird flipped up and emptied himself all over this guy. And he said, "It was not attractive."
Well, I understand though that there's quite a volume.
Well, that's exactly, and it's a volume of nastiness because you know it's bad to begin with. Otherwise, a vulture wouldn't be cleaning it up. So, but we need to change subjects. I'm not sure how, but I have
how
this.
Do you get out?
I have this innate ability to just turn things on a dime to the wrong direction.
Well, I was going
to
say, how in the world did we get on 100,000 watt? International shortwave station.
Talking about alligators and buzzard vomit.
Yeah, oh, buzzard vomit, that's what I'm talking about. I mean, now the alligators are a different thing, you know,
exactly.
Completely. You know.
I don't know.
But don't people, don't they capture alligators when they're little and try to keep them as pets up to a point, don't they?
Some do, ill-advised. My brother-in-law, actually, I'm going to kind of tell tales out of school. My brother-in-law... we went out in the backyard, and I don't know if you know this, alligators can climb fences.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, they will. There's YouTube video of alligators climbing fences. He had a fenced-in yard, and he goes outside, and there's a 3-foot alligator. And, of course, his dogs are out there barking. I had boxers. His dogs are out there barking at, and his kids are home and everything. And he goes, what the reasonable person. You go outside, and you find your dogs barking at an alligator. Who's the first person you're going to call? Animal control, right? No, he calls his mom. Mom, you never believe what's back. Look at this. Did you call animal control? No, man. Not. And he's out there with a broomstick trying to get it over the fence. Like, yeah. That is not part of my thought process. But, yeah. It's, and again, one of my friends here, Kevin, W4KEV, who lived in New Orleans. His house was destroyed in Katrina, getting back to that. But he had a big canal in his backyard, and alligators lived in it. And the babies would go back there, and we would go back there in the back by the canal, and we would make this noise, which is the sound that the baby alligators make when they call. And boy, mama would come running, and it was neat to watch. It was really cool to watch. It's cool living down in the South, man. It's cool down there. Well, I mean, it's hot, but it's neat. It's humid. It's very humid.
Well, what about spiders and snakes? We've covered every other part of the aspect of...
I don't like spiders and snakes.
I mean, not to quote...
That ain't what it takes to love... No, that's a whole different thing. Sorry.
Oh.
Get back to singing. Yeah, no, they're down there, too. We don't have near the... I'm from Oklahoma, and thankfully, we have less of a problem with those, especially with the brown recluse fiddlebacks down there than we did in Oklahoma. Ticks also is a thing we don't have near the problem with the Lyme disease as they do up north. So, but we, you know, I've just pulled a bunch of ticks off my dog. We live on 10 acres out in the country, so, you know, you're never alone.
Yeah. Well, I guess I want to say that, you know, friends of mine have moved from, say, Michigan to Tennessee, but and there's all these, like, snake horror stories.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is as a kid, I remember far more snakes in Michigan at transmitter sites especially.
Yeah.
Open the door, there they are. And I take care of 200 kilowatt FMs that are out in the sticks quite a little ways. And I've yet to have a snake encounter at either one of those places. And I've been caring for these sites for well over 10 years.
I can tell you a funny story. Somebody posted a picture of the cover of the December 89 issue of Popular Communications the other day on Facebook. And it had to do with WRNO Worldwide, the shortwave. And so there are pictures in there. I was talking to Joe Eisenberg, who is the kit editor for CQ Magazine, KZNEB. And in 1984, during the World's Fair, he visited New Orleans and came down, and Joe Costello, who owned it, basically gave him carte blanche and said, you know, showed him everything. And he's out at the, one of the transmitter sites with the engineer, and it's out in the swamps. And they're getting ready to walk out the door. It's night, and the engineer goes, wait, hang on a second. He noticed there's a shotgun leaning up against the door. And he says, why do you have a shotgun? He says, well, I'll show you. And he takes a big, like, six-cell flashlight, and he's shining it underneath the car. He goes, why are you doing that? He said, well, alligator's eyes are very reflective.
So he can come out the door and meet his match, so to speak.
Yeah, and believe me, they will move faster than you will. And if you, you know, the alligators don't have, they're not known for their senses of humor. So Yeah, but that was why he kept a shotgun and a 6L flashlight at the transmitter site for alligators.
Yeah, somebody, I don't know who it was I was talking to, said that they likened a sameness of some sort to alligators as they would killer sharks. They have the same type of mentality.
They basically, it's I'm going to kill you before you kill me, and if I can eat you, I will. Yeah, it's welcome to nature.
Yeah, that's
what
nice.
What it's all about. Yeah.
And that's why the third or fourth floor in a building is safer than the basement area.
Yeah, exactly. That's the way the animal kingdom works. Are you a threat? Are you food? If you can answer no to either of those, they're not interested in you. If you're not a threat, and you're not food. You don't exist.
Well, you're living there. Let me ask you this question. If you're, in Tennessee, people swim in lakes here.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess my question is, you know, can you swim in lakes there?
But you need to be aware. I mean, especially the bayous, there's, you know, people lose dogs every year to alligators. There was a guy who went swimming in a lake or a bayou or something not too long ago that lost his arm to an alligator. So you got to know the body of water. You don't just go jumping willy-nilly into somebody's, you know, bayou or farm pond or whatever. You need to be able to see what's in there, at least have an idea. It's not something that one does hold my beer and watch this, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. In fact, there was a thing. Somebody, I think, got killed or lost an arm or something who did that, who was taunting an alligator. And he said, I'm going to go down there and show that alligator what for. And he jumped in, and I think the thing killed him. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like there was something like that on YouTube.
Yeah, it was fairly recent. It was in the news fairly recently. So.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, once again, people see with these guys on TV that, you know, fool around with things like that and do things like that.
Those are, should be, trained professionals. There's a guy on YouTube that I really enjoy watching. He's called Viper Keeper. And he keeps poisonous snakes, and we're talking cobras and of that ilk of poisonous snakes, and watching him handle these things is just amazing. But, you know, he's a trained professional. He's been doing it for decades, and it's not something you want to mess around with. Some kid got killed not too long ago. I think he had a cobra in the house, and it bit him. You know, they reptiles are not pets, that's for sure. So, you know, handle with care.
Yeah, I was wondering if you'd ever heard any alligator stories at transmitter sites, like Has anyone ever gone out to the transmitter site and opened the fence and now you can't get to the transmitter because we got...
Yeah, it's happened. Yeah, absolutely it's happened. Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's happened.
So, yeah, I guess what do you do then? You get a couple of big clamps. And
try to figure out a way, I guess, you know.
Tune the thing up.
They don't scare easy, really. I mean, you know, they do tend to stand their ground. So
that's that'd be quite a greeting.
It's never happened to me personally. I've never had it happen to me personally, but I've heard stories. Oh, yeah.
Well, do you ever do any engineering work? Do you ever go to a transmitter?
No, I used to dabble in that. I used to help with the with the maintenance of the big 50,000 watt Continental at KOMA, which was amazing. We would sign the thing off at like 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night, Monday morning, and normally we were back on by four. We would or sign off at two, back on by four, where we would let it idle with no modulation for a while, and the engineer would go in and do his alignment and stuff, and then we would shut it down. And bleed all the nastiness out of it, and then go in and blow the cabinet out and get all the dust out. And it was just amazing. 50,000 watts. We would walk out to the three tower array out in the backyard, and about halfway out there, the 6 foot long fluorescents that we were carrying would blink on. Yep. We'd hang those in the fence, and so. But well, I used to help with that a little bit, but I never was much of an engineer. I'm more talent. Well, again, I use that word loosely.
It's interesting when folks come out to WTWW. My son Matt parked his car under the antenna system while we were doing hauling transmitters in a building.
Yeah,
and when he went back, the car wouldn't start. But not only would it not start, but I don't know if he can hear me, Matt. Can you hear me there? I don't know if I turn the monitor up a little bit more. Hello. Yeah, talking to you. I was going to say, step up to the mic. I know you're eating a hot dog. Okay. But tell Don what happened when you parked your car underneath that that rhombic antenna.
It melted the coil packs right to the vehicle.
Holy wow. But now I read Wolfman Jack's book, Have Mercy, and he worked at you know the big border blaster down in Mexico, you know, 250,000 watts, and he tells the story of the headlights, the incandescent filaments in the headlights would glow from the RF.
You know, we were coming up the driveway one time, and I heard a voice, and the car radio was off. Matter of fact, the car radio was unoperational. and we were still hearing this voice.
Yeah.
So I said stop, and we stopped the vehicle, and I started listening and moving around up, you know, trying to get near the dashboard or trying to figure out what in the world is it coming out of speaker. It was coming out of a paper cup.
Isn't that amazing?
The one that you get through a drive-through.
Yeah.
It was sitting in the cup holder, and it had completely dried up.
Yeah.
So there was something in there that was rectifying
and resonating. Yeah,
yeah, and it was acting as a, and I don't know. I've had a couple people say that it was you know late at night they were coming in, everything was really really quiet. They just got the mail, and they're maybe 3/4 of a mile, a mile down the road, and all of a sudden they hear this sound and they don't know where it's coming from, and they start walking around. It's coming from the fence.
Yeah,
their fencing.
The fence. Yeah. We used to have that problem with KOMA in Oklahoma City. You know, 50,000 watts, and at night it was all directed west. And the people who lived west in our nighttime pattern, oh, they hated us because we would come over their toasters, we'd come over bed springs, we'd come over plumbing. It was amazing. Yeah, radio's amazing. That's why I fell in love with radio and the whole idea of radio at a young age. It's black magic and voodoo, and it's cool.
Yeah, I tend to totally agree with you. And I appreciate you sitting down here, but I can't imagine that I've probably taken up half of your day here, you know, of all the things you probably have to do.
I was on my way to lunch, and I was going to get a hot dog. I've got to do, a half hour away from the Young Ham of the Year Award, so 25 minutes. So I've got to get me a quick hot dog and get ready to do that. But, I appreciate the time that you've given me here.
That's one of the things that we can do, you know, here, is we can sit down and talk. Yeah. And right. We're not under any kind of pressure.
That's the beauty of it.
You know, and we can talk about anything, including, you know, vulture vomit or whatever.
We don't have to worry about traffic and weather on the nines here on...
There you go.
Right, exactly.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. And then I want to remind folks to be watching Don. Watch for him on amateur radio. I'm sorry, on Ham Nation.
Yeah.
And also, amateur radio news line is back.
Yes.
And in full force. And so these guys are working very hard. So be sure and not just listen to it, but also support the venture. Because there's expense involved in it.
There's
expense involved in anything and everything, and you don't even know it. You know.
And you can also watch the Young Ham of the Year Award presentation at 26 minutes from now. On W5KUB.com. Tom will be webcasting that. So
That's very, very cool.
Yes, it is. And yesterday was her birthday. Yesterday was her 15th birthday.
Really?
Yes, so it's a birthday party.
Oh, no, our Young Ham of the Year, why don't you...
Anna Veal. I'll bring her by.
Okay, bring her by.
We'll bring her by. Yeah, absolutely.
At some point, yes.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ted.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. This is radio station WTWW coming to you from the United States of America. We're broadcasting from Huntsville, Alabama. That's where we're at right now. And we want to invite you to keep tuned in. And we'll have all sorts of guests coming our way as the broadcast continues on. Want to remind you also that this edition of the Huntsville Hamfest is brought to you by the Sea Crane Company, and we want to talk to you about the SkyWave radio and remind you that right now, if you ordered the SkyWave from Sea Crane and you mention WTWW or you follow our link from our website, WTWW.us, and mention it, you get a choice of a free portable antenna or the deluxe Sea Crane battery charger. So don't miss out on that. This is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, United States of America. There you go. That's Looking Glass. A song called Brandy. Hey, guess what? We are live, and we are live from Huntsville, Alabama. This is radio station WTWW coming to you from the United States of America. And we're at the Huntsville Amateur Radio Hamfest. Cactus, have a seat here real quick. This is a fellow I was telling you we're waiting on. We can never get him to sit down and talk to us. Do you know him? No? He's a fellow to get to know, I'll tell you.
What's your name? George, I'm Cactus. Okay. Like a bush.
K4YMB. You know, I'll tell you what. I had an email, and you get up right up on that PR40 because it's close talking. Had an email said, well, that Cedars Ham Fest is not going to happen. And that went out, and I got it, and I thought, oh, man, Cedars, you know. But then about maybe two or three days later, here comes another email that basically says, and it was from Cactus, it says, Cedars Ham Fest is back on and on schedule, so it's going to be the original tailgate Ham Fest at the Cedars of Lebanon State Park. And why don't you tell the folks about this now?
Okay, let me put a paper there. What we're going to do, and it's sponsored this year by the Stones River Amateur Radio Club, and we have a license for a absolute non-commercial tailgating party. And what that basically means is you come in like we used to years ago, your pickup truck, your car, whatever, tailgate out of the back among ourselves and all said and done, but it'll be non-commercial. In other words, we don't have vendors there. I found out that if you make it commercial and if you're going to bring in vendors like we have here in Huntsville, it's a really big ordeal to get the license and the insurance. Even you got to have somebody collect the tax money and things like that. But the main thing that I tried to do when we heard that Short Mountain could not put it on for whatever reason, and they had some problems, and it's going to be canceled. Well, I decided, well, I've been having Cedars myself for many, many years, and I thought I'd put it together and try to make it operate just one more year like it did many years ago. And that's tailgating and free gate and free tailgating. But we are going to supply, believe it or not, ice water. we're going to have ice water to drink, and that's going to be free. But anyway, it's going to be the August the 29th of this month, and the tailgaters can come in at 6 a.m. in the morning, and everybody come on in, and we're going to have a good time and have a lot of fellowship and things like that, and take a lot of pictures, all said and done. And I guess you'll be there, Ted.
I plan on being there. But the thing that's bothering me is that what you said, 6 o'clock in the morning?
Well, you can come in at 9 if you want to.
Well, you know, the rumor has it that the Tennessee Ham Fest, they'll say they open, say, at 8 o'clock. But the experienced guys arrive around 5:30 with flashlights.
And they carry, that's right. They carry the flashlights. And do most of the trading before the sun comes up.
There you go. No, I've always enjoyed Cedars. I mean, I don't know. There's something about, I don't know what it is. It's just the atmosphere. And but now that I think about it, I can only remember maybe just a handful of dealers, you know, that would actually show up.
Well, that's true. It's not, but the idea is, as I understand it, when I got the license, it could be non-commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Be non-commercial, and that means no dealers coming in, taking in money and selling merchandise and not paying sales tax, things like that. We're just going to be, it's going to be one big tailgate party, and that's what it's going to be.
Now, but there won't be any, you've got to have ice water there, but there's not going to be like a concession stand or something.
Because
once you do that, you're back into the sales tax thing again.
You've got to bring your own peanut butter sandwich.
Well, that's not that bad a deal, I don't think.
Well, it is.
unless you're just terrible, can't make a peanut butter.
But this is the way it's been many, many years. Mm-hmm. And over the last several years, it's been commercial. Mm-hmm. And evidently, there was a problem with that being commercial, as far as I was concerned, because the state of Tennessee informed me right away that I was not going to be able to put it on commercially. It had to be absolutely non-commercial, which means no gate, which means no fee for tailgating, which means no selling anything that we can make money on. And that's what we're going to do. And I'm just doing it so it'll continue one more year. Now, next year, Short Mountain's going to pick it up. It's going to be, I think, the 27th maybe of August. But they're going to pick it up next year and continue on with it. But this year, it's going to be Stones River is going to do it.
Now, folks, listen. Give us the date again. This is the 29th, is it?
The last Saturday of August. And we jokingly call it the last rainy weekend of August. It has rained several times. I hope it doesn't rain this time. But it's going to be August 29th.
And it's totally tailgate. Bring all the stuff that you want to part with.
Anything. You can bring ex-mother-in-laws or whatever. We don't care. You just come on in and trade. And I've got pictures of you and Holly and your group back 10 years ago. Yeah.
I know we've attended on a pretty well. Now, you know, there was a there was a Gladeville Ham Fest.
That what happened there, as I understand it, and it's absolutely just my understanding, that Short Mountain thought they could probably do a better job by moving it across the highway out of Cedars Park and have it over there. And they did a good job. They had a good Ham Fest there. Everything is fine. But for some reason, they decided to go back to Cedars. But anyway, it's.
I just remember that but it seemed like one year there was a Cedars and a Gladeville at the same, you know, within the same year.
I don't think so.
No?
I think it's one or the other. But it's back at Cedars now, and it's and what we call this, I don't call it the Cedars of Lebanon tailgate. I call it the original ham radio tailgate party. And that's like it was back 5 years ago or 10 years ago and 15 years ago. Where everybody just show up and have a good time.
Tell the folks a little bit about the CWNet that you're involved in.
Well, the CWNet meets on 3.562 at 7 o'clock Central Standard Time. And it's the old Tennessee CWNet. And we have actively about 35 or 40 members, and anywhere from 3 or 4 or 5, 6, sometimes 12 will check in at night. And we do a real good job with it. It's called Tennessee CW Traffic Net. And it's been going on since 1936.
There you go. And, of course, there's the Tennessee Traffic Net on 3980.
That's been going on since 1947.
I know you're there all.
Well, that's going to do it. That's all the time we've got this week for QSO. Want to ask you to tune in next week, same time, same station, for the QSO Radio Show. 73s. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening.
Wire, which is just about the right wavelength for 1 megahertz.